We are exploring spiritual journey for the month of January. And the way I have chosen to do it is to explore some of the stages that we go through while we're on a spiritual journey. So last week we started with the first three stages, which I'm just going to very quickly touch on as a review today before we go on to stage four, which is an inward journey where we are wrestling, and within that wrestling we will hit a wall that we will have to find a way through somehow, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The model we're using for that spiritual journey, and the biblical model we're using, is Father Abraham had seven sons. Abraham was the first actual journeyer in scripture that we read about, leaving his homeland with his father and eventually moving towards Canaan, an unknown area. So that's going to be tied in with our message today. So we read starting from Genesis 18. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes." Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. It sounds like they did that really quickly, but you can't cook a calf that fast. Or bread, that's right. He set it before them and stood by them under the tree while they ate. And they said to him, "Where is your wife Sarah?" And he said, "There, in the tent." Then one said, "I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. That's an understatement. They were 90 and 100. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I have grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old?' Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh, for she was afraid." He said, "Oh, yes, you did laugh." In time, and this, now we're going on to chapter 21, in between this, he had had another son through Sarah's handmaiden, Ishmael, who became the father of the Islamic religion. So he has a son now, Ishmael, but God has promised Sarah a son with Abraham. So the Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah bore him. And Abraham circumcised his son, Isaac, when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Now Sarah said, "God has brought laughter to me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And the name Isaac means laughter. And she said, "Who would ever have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." The child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Last one, just go back for a second, Keith. Last week I did say that we're all on physical journeys. We cannot help but be on physical journeys because we're physical beings. So we take physical journeys through our life, through infancy, to toddler, to child, to teenager, so on. Physical journeys, we keep growing. We can't help it. But if we don't embrace that we are also spiritual beings, we're missing out on half of our lives. It would be like only living using half of your senses to not go on a spiritual journey. You have your taste and your sight, but you don't have hearing or touch if you don't embrace the physical journey. So there are stages on which we through which we move in spiritual journeys that are common to all spiritual journeys. We do not skip them because we do not get the lessons we need unless we go through each of these phases of the journey. And we may bounce back and forth between them, but we can never move ahead until we have finished the one before. And then we absorb the ones before us and can go back and forth in them. I'm taking this month as the source of my material a book called Critical Journey, which is by Janet Hagsberg and Robert Gulich. So as we see, all is well for Abraham and Sarah and his family. No matter what Abraham has done here in his travels, he has blossomed and he has become prosperous and he has gotten everything that God has promised him along the way. And the journey is great to this moment for Abraham. So he has moved through these first three phases of the spiritual journey. And so let's just briefly review what phase one is. Phase one is that any time you start a relationship, you go into a new relationship. Oh, by the way, I meant to tell you, there are note sheets if you want to take notes, and David can get them for you if you need them, if you want to take notes today. Anyway, phase one of the spiritual journey is this. You become aware that there is something greater than ourselves that we can relate to. Whatever you call that, a higher power, reality, energy, that sort of thing. And you encounter that outside of yourselves usually as an experiential thing and not a rational thing. It's sort of like starting a relationship. You fall madly in love in this phase with God. It is an innocent time, exciting, fresh. It's like walking on air, like when you just started a relationship. And it's usually entered in through a sense of awe or a sense of deep need for something greater than yourself. That's phase one. Phase two, then, when you've gotten into it, is that phase in a relationship where you make a commitment to each other. You're going to try and work on it. So it's a time of learning and belonging, of wanting to soak in the tradition and learn all you can. Because you think now you've found the answer to life. You have found it. And you get meaning from belonging to a particular group who believe the same things. So you get involved in a tribe that shapes your identity so that you can grow and learn, and you are eager to suck everything up that you can, to learn everything you can. At this point in our journey, after we've just fallen in love, we're not confident in our own knowledge, but we trust that there are others out there who will teach us and will help us to grow. So we're growing here. The third phase, then, after we have moved through that phase, and each of these phases can take a long time, depending on where you're at, but the phase three is this. It's a time of doing. I have learned things now, and I want to be involved, and I want to do things now. We do what we can for God. We say we are in God's service at this point in time. And this is the stage of our spiritual journey that is very productive and can be very personally rewarding. Because not only are you growing, you are engaged, and you are involved, and you are doing things, and you are so excited about this. It can feel like the height of your faith experience. Because it is fulfilling, exciting, inspiring, fruitful. And when your spiritual life is in this phase, your whole life seems to feel like that. You feel like things are going well in your entire life when you're here. You have been growing, you have been involved, and you think everything is good here. So those are the first three phases we go through in any spiritual journey. By the way, it's not just Christians who can go through these journeys. Lots of people go through these journeys without being a part of a faith tradition, and lots of people in faith traditions never go through these journeys. But you can go through them in Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, those kinds of things. It's a spiritual journey, trying to understand your higher power. So these are the first three phases of the spiritual life. So let's go back to our story of Abraham, because things have been going great for him. He has moved through and he is productive. He's feeling great in his life. But see what happens to him now as Isaac grows up. After these things, after the things that have happened to Abraham up until this point, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." And Abraham said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac," it's not his only son, but anyway, "your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering and set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey, and the boy and I will go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac said to his father Abraham, "Father," he said, "here I am, my son." He said, "The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. When they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham looked up and saw a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will indeed bless you. And I will make your offspring as numerous as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of their enemies, and by your offspring shall all the nations of the earth gain blessing for themselves, because you have obeyed my voice." So far up to now in Abraham's journey and in the spiritual journey, things have been good and blessed. But what happens when you think you have this amazing relationship with God, and all seems well until it's not, and you're tested? Things come crashing down spiritually, and you wrestle with God. How could Abraham not have wrestled with God? We see him just faithfully going on. What do you do if your child is threatened? You want to protect them at all costs, even from God. Abraham at this point could have walked away from his faith and chosen his son. What happens when God asks you to sacrifice even your faith? You'd rather die. And this is what leads us into phase four of the spiritual journey, which is the inward journey of wrestling. Wrestling with yourself and wrestling with God, where it feels like we're asking to kill something. It feels like we're losing our faith. Some people will never get here in their spiritual journey. Some people will get here and stay here. Some people will get here and not like it and revert back. But this is what phase four looks like, and it is where we hit the wall. We begin to doubt that what we've been told all the way along by our tribe, our family when we were growing up, society is not true. We begin to doubt it. We begin a deep inner journey to try and find ourselves and to find God again. This is where people say they're having a faith crisis. There's a great uncertainty in life and in their faith. And you begin to question what you believe about God, what you've been told about God. And it is here that most people in this phase think they have lost their faith. They feel abandoned and lost, and that nobody else understands what they're going through. And to some degree, that is true because it is a deep inner journey. It's easy when we're all together and all talking about the same things and active in our faith. But in this place, it's very difficult because we have more questions than answers. We begin to see God as something completely different than we had before. God is no longer comfortable in this place. God has been released and is out of the box, and there's no way to get God back in phase four. God becomes something bigger and more. Sometimes it feels like we don't believe anymore because we do not believe what we believed before. We believe, start to explore something new about God. And it seems to those who are in the first phases, because people here may drop out of church because they're always questioning. It seems to those that are in the first three phases and very active in the church that person has lost their faith. And you begin to think that you might have lost your faith too. Here, there's a great deal of grief and loss and apathy and wandering in a desert. Because what sustained you before in your faith life and in the church no longer does. And you feel like you've hit the wall, which comes in this phase of the faith journey. I remember this very well. It was when I left my last church and I was going off to theological school, and I thought, what on earth am I doing? I don't think I believe anymore. And it was a deep, deep struggle for me because theological school just challenged me even more to believe things that I had never believed before and challenged my faith. The wall is a part of this phase that you're going to hit and have to go through in order to come out the other side. And many people never do. They stay stuck in this phase and never work their way through it. But the wall itself is another layer of transformation where a new life of faith can begin if we can get through it. You have to move through it as well. You cannot circumvent it. You cannot go below it. You cannot go over it. You have to move through it. And lots of people are never able to do this. It is the most mysterious part of a faith journey, but it is pivotal in order to move on to another place. That's the wall. In order to move through the wall, and this is huge. And often we need help doing it. It is slowly breaking down the barriers we have built between our will and a newer awareness of God in our lives. It is us against God at this point. Our will against God's will at this point. And the hardest thing we can do in this place often is to surrender to and trust in God in life, in the holy, whatever you want to call it, is to trust that that will carry you in life. And it's hard because we've been doing so much self-exploration during this phase that we begin to depend on ourselves and feel like we can depend on ourselves and there's nothing else we can depend on. Yet, in this phase, if we can get through it, what we will experience is spiritual and psychological healing. That is soul healing. That is the guilt and the shame and the fear and the wounds and everything that has happened in your life up until this point can be healed here. And when these things are healed, we may move through to another place of depth in our spiritual growth. If we can move through this. And when we move through, what we discover is a deep, deep awareness of forgiveness, acceptance, unconditional love for ourselves and for others. And in this place, which is very difficult in our culture, we have no need to know anymore exactly who or what God is. We can just surrender and trust it to help us move through life. There is, in this wall phase, this phase two, a melting and a reshaping of who we are. I so wish I had known this place when I was back in my journey so that when I hit the wall, I knew it was a normal place to be in a spiritual journey in order to move people deeper into their faith. Because it is a scary place to be. It requires guidance and great patience. And the thing about this is it's very difficult to get guidance. There are so many people who don't go through this phase. There's so many people who never hit it. And that's fine. They can stay in phase three and stay active. But there are a lot of people who don't hit this. And therefore, some people who do will be able to give you guidance. But so many even religious leaders have not gone through it and therefore do not know it and cannot help you through it because they don't know it themselves. It requires guidance and you have to look for it. Often it's a spiritual director or some kind of counseling that will help you through. It takes time, discernment, solitude, and reflection. And that's why I say some people kind of drop to the side here and you think they've lost their faith because they're out exploring something else. It takes also, which is part of the biggest roadblock to this, is a willingness to let go of yourself. And if you do, you can experience a closer relationship with God in a new and different way if you move through this phase. However, lots of people get stuck here, if they even get here at all, and this is what happens when you're stuck in phase four. You are always questioning, always learning, and never finding any answers or truth for yourself. It is a continual exploration with finding yourself and personal growth. That, however, is not going to lead you through stage four if you continue to try to find yourself. And some people get immobilized. It's called acedia. And it's just an apathy. It's kind of an apathy where I can't do anything. I'm immobilized. There's a feeling of lack of intimacy with God, with yourself, and with others. You're just done. People here may turn back or leave the faith altogether, or they may start exploring other things or other faiths to fill that vacuum that is left because they feel like they've lost God. That's people who are stuck in phase four, and I know some people who have been stuck in this for years and may always be stuck in this. Never let the healing take place in their lives. That's stuck in phase four. If you want to move through it and move through the wall, you have to give up your search for self. Which doesn't mean you don't have to do that for a while as part of phase four. You do it for a while, but eventually to move through, you have to give up the search for yourself. Allow for certainty in a new understanding of God that you have developed. Be open to letting go of your own will and to let go of your bitterness, resentments, fears, and let God heal whatever is broken in your life. And then let life, the holy God, take the lead in this one. That's why it's so hard to move from phase four. I was reading this week, Joan Chittister wrote in the devotional I use, life is a series of resurrections, provided we're willing to let old things die. That sort of sums up this phase. It is letting things die so new things can be resurrected, and it's very difficult. So here's how I thought of phase four in a way. It is a journey into your past in order to identify those past hurts and let them be healed so you can move past them to find your new and true home, which of course is love or God. It can be painful. You can experience great fear here and it can be scary, but it can be so worth it. And so as I was exploring this theme this week, a song came to mind that Chrissy Curzon had sung at DeWinton a couple months ago, and I'd never heard it before she sang it. It's from the animated movie Anastasia, and it's called Journey to the Past. So I quickly texted Chrissy this week and said, please would you sing this at both churches, because it encapsulates this phase of moving back and the fear in order to move forward. So Chrissy is here, and she's going to sing that for us today.